Good morning. Today, we're going to look at the book Beyond Words and Thoughts by Joel S. Goldsmith, Chapter 2, Building a Consciousness of Grace. Now, if you haven't done so, take a moment to get quiet and be still. Invite the Father. Father, show me what you want me to see. I listen. I'm receptive. Move within me, that I may hear your voice. A lot of this you're going to find very familiar, because we seem to keep coming to the same conclusion. And he begins with, "It is not possible to reach God or to embrace truth through the human mind. Although it is possible for truth to impart itself to us." And there we have it again. It's not what you think, it's what is imparted. It is unlikely, however, that the fullness of truth will be revealed to any one of us, because as human beings, we do not have the capacity to receive truth in its fullness. Instead, we receive certain facets, realizations, and principles of truth, which are continually flowing in proportion to our receptivity and openness. Nothing that can be known with the mind is absolute truth. Therefore, we cannot depend on any statement of truth we know. In any and every experience, we must open our consciousness and be receptive to whatever may be imparted to us. For this reason, we can never live on yesterday's manna, nor depend on anything we knew yesterday. In other words, if we are in meditation, we are not in meditation for the purpose of remembering something we have read in books. We are in meditation for the purpose of receiving an impartation from the Father within. When it comes in the silence of meditation, it comes to us as impartations from the Spirit, not as an activity of memory, not as an activity of mind. When we first come to the study of truth, we believe that if we can just reach God, we are going to have the power that will destroy all error. But as our understanding of the principles grows, this ignorance is chipped away, and we stop looking to God with the expectation that He will remove the evils of this world. Similarly, as we learn through reading, listening, and study that there is only one power, we stop trying to use that one power to do something to another power called evil, sin, disease, or death. With this knowledge of truth, we are given the grace to cease the mental activity involved in attempting to get God to overcome our enemies, and we are thereby enabled to relax inwardly and await the realization of grace, which is the non-power or the impartation. These principles of truth that we learn through study and practice develop our consciousness to the place where we resist not evil. See, we don't put up a fight. We don't take up the sword. We don't take up the sword of words and truths, words and thoughts. We resist not evil, and we can put up the sword, where we can retire within ourselves in an inner peace. And in that descent of peace, become aware of grace. And there's that expression again, the descent of peace. The descent of peace is from your consciousness, from God consciousness. And that descent of peace is the impartation. That grace is not a power. It is a presence. There is no need for any power, because nothing of an erroneous nature is there. What do we know so far? We know that any truth that we have memorized, any statement of truth or any scripture that we have worked with yesterday, is yesterday's manna, and so we can't depend on it. So when we go into our meditation, we're not looking for a power to overcome a problem. We're not looking for a power that we can use. We're not looking for a word or a thought to which we can cling. No, we release all that. We resist not. We don't pick up the sword. We stand still. And we await the descent of peace. And when we feel that impartation of my peace, it is a presence. And in that presence, we become aware of grace living our lives. And the presence, well, it brings with it a sense of peace. And the peace brings with it an awareness of presence. And that presence dispels any thought of error, any image of error. But it doesn't send it anywhere. It reveals the non-existence of it. It dissolves, sometimes before your very eyes. And as the light shines in the darkness disappears. Okay. The scriptural statement, "In thy presence is fullness of joy," is a clear promise that in God's presence there is no sin, disease, death, lack, or limitation, because otherwise there could be no fullness of joy. So, in thy presence, evil of any name or nature cannot function, for it has no existence. The study in which we engage leads us to a place in consciousness where we can relax, rest in a state of receptivity, and then eventually hear or feel something that would indicate, "Fear not, it is I. It is I. Be not afraid. Nothing shall in any wise come nigh thy dwelling place." This must inevitably bring us to a place of resting from taking thought, realizing I cannot use truth, but if I relax, truth can use me, and it can function in my life. I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. But if Christ is living our life, if Christ is functioning through us and as us, we are not taking thought. We are not doing. And it is as if we were standing to one side, being a beholder of Christ, truth, living our life. And there it is again, be a beholder. So this mystical life is turning within, standing to one side, waiting for the descent of my peace, and being a beholder as that peace, that presence, reveals the non-existence of error and the omnipresence of truth. As you are reading this or listening to this, at the same time be relaxing. Let go of any and every thought. Release the belief that there is anything that you can do about anything. Relax. Be still. Be still and let God be God. Recognize that you could not possibly embrace God in your mind. Let your remembrance be, Christ liveth my life. God functions as my being. Let the whole earth be still. And above all, let your mind be still. It's always the same, isn't it? Yet we take all these bypaths and detours, and then we pick up a book like this and open it to any chapter, and it's all laid out again. And most of us have to hear it over and over and over before we have that experience of turning within, letting go, surrendering, and momentarily standing still within. Then there's an inner movement. Something happens. Oh my God, there really is a presence. And it's really with me. Right this moment. And then we get up and we go about our business, and an hour or two later, we've forgotten completely about this. In the beginning, it may take us days or weeks to get back here. But as we become more proficient at meditation, it only takes a couple of days, and eventually only a few hours. And finally, we are able to close our eyes, whether we're on a subway or in a car. As long as we're not driving at the moment, we're able to close our eyes and immediately feel that impartation, that descent of peace. It must become a working part of our consciousness. And it will if we practice and practice and practice. Eventually our consciousness within will become receptive 24 hours a day. And the descent of peace will happen closer and closer together. Sometimes it happens and you're not even thinking about God. You just suddenly feel this presence, which is an indication that thinking is not necessary. Take no thought. I have come that you might have life, and life more abundantly. And I, in this case, is the presence, the descent of peace, the impartation of grace. Grace, if you look it up, is a free gift. You don't have to merit it, you don't have to earn it, you don't have to be worthy. Grace is a free gift. And so don't bother yourself about being good enough. Don't worry about not being able to earn this grace. You can't. But you can receive it in meditation as a free gift from God. I wrote a paper 51 years ago, or 52 years ago, and in it was said, God feels the combined struggle of mankind. And when one person anywhere surrenders, there's no more struggle. And grace is God's way of saying, thank you. So, this must become our way of life, and eventually this must become our very being. So that wherever you go, grace is. So that anyone, anywhere reaching out, touches grace. Not because you know something. No. Only because your consciousness is open to grace. And so someone reaching out to your consciousness touches grace. The grace that you experience here is the grace that's revealed there. Because grace is omnipresence. And so, when Joel says, grace will pay my bills, he means it. He means it. If he gets out of the way and becomes a beholder, if you get out of the way and become a beholder, if I get out of the way and become a beholder, grace will live my life. Your life. Her life. All right, so returning to the chapter. As you relax in this surrender, letting the mind that was in Christ Jesus be your mind, grace will begin to function. Grace will function as wisdom, as harmony and peace. Grace will function as health, wholeness, completeness, inspiration, as the source of all knowledge, and it will flow through you, in you, and as you. I live, yet not I, the little person, but I, Christ, liveth my life. Those of us who have been working with the Infinite Way principles are now approaching that state and stage of consciousness that lives by grace. Not by physical might, nor by mental power, not by any knowledge either, but by grace. Now, you should be rising above the letter of truth into the spirit. You can see that knowing the truth with your human mind, with a statement or a scripture or a memorized sentence in a book, all that is the letter. But receiving an impartation from spirit, that is the spirit. So we should be rising above the letter of truth into the spirit, into that area of consciousness where you live without words and without thoughts, above the law. Now, the law, as you sow, so shall you reap. The law was given by Moses, but grace by Jesus Christ. And when you learn how to receive the descent of my peace and live by grace, for you, there's no more law. You have wiped out the law. There's no more sowing and there's no more reaping. And why is that? Because you're not living your own life. You're not making decisions and choices and following your own ideas. You're not sowing anymore. The Spirit is flowing. And so the Spirit is sowing. And when the Spirit sows, you reap life everlasting. The Spirit sows the temple not made by hands, not made by words or thoughts. When you are receptive to grace, and Spirit flows through you and as you, you have risen above the law. There's no more karma at all, whatsoever. Because Spirit sows Spirit and reaps a temple not made with hands, a temple made by Spirit. And this is a very real experience. Very, very real. You receive this impartation, this descent of peace. You receive grace. You receive my Spirit. And without taking a thought or a word, as you stand to one side, a beholder, this grace, this descent of peace, this impartation of my presence flows through your consciousness and builds your life, your temple not made by hands, your temple eternal in the heavens. So, once you realize that you cannot use spiritual power, and you no longer rely on physical or mental power, you then reach that attitude and altitude of consciousness, which is a state of grace, which is a state of non-power. And you discover that what heretofore has operated as power is no longer power in your individual experience. Which is why you can walk down in this state of consciousness, you can walk down the middle of the road in the center of Ukraine and nothing will touch you. Because it's non-power in your experience. That it will probably be a long time before the grace consciousness is demonstrated in its fullness is evidenced by the fact that after the Master's resurrection, he was still full of nail wounds and knife wounds. To that degree, he was still under physical law. But the point is not whether you can at this moment walk on water. The point is not whether you can deliberately swallow a bottle of poison and survive. That is not the point. The point is that from the moment you begin to function under grace, physical and mental laws have less and less power over you. When you function under grace, you may be called to those who have swallowed poison or to those who have been seriously injured. But by your realization of non-power, you can bring them through it and lift them above whatever law they may have come under. So, you're called. Somebody says, my child has swallowed poison. You say, I will go to work right now. You hang up the phone. You close your eyes. What does he mean when he says, state of non-power? That's what you bring to the situation. Not, oh my God, what do I do about this? What's the truth? And struggle and as if you're drowning, trying to stay afloat. No. That would be resisting. Well, what does Joel say? Oh, yeah, begin with God. God is the only presence. God is the only life. God is the only substance. God is the only law. God is the only being. Well, I just threw a lot of statements of truth at the problem. And none of them will stick. So I'm not there yet, am I? I'm resisting. I'm entering the argument. The sides are joined and it's a stalemate. So that's not it either. What then? What? Something about the descent of my peace. And what have I to do with that? I can't do anything about that. I can't make it descend. I can't make it impart itself. But I can be still. I can wait. I can stand to one side. I can behold. I can bear witness. Let me do that instead. Father, reveal thyself. And in the silence, I feel peace descending upon me. Peace, a presence imparting itself. And everything relaxes. Everything is at peace. The body relaxes. The mind stops struggling. Thank you, Father. And then I just rest in it as long as I feel it. You must remember, to some extent, almost from the beginning of your experience in the infinite way, you have been under grace. Every healing that you have witnessed has been a proof of grace, because the law involved has been set aside. If you have had a spiritual healing of a cold, the flu or pneumonia, or any of the diseases that we presume are caused by germs, it was grace that proved that the material law was of non-effect. The law of germs, the law of infection or contagion, could not operate where the consciousness of grace is. So it is that any healing, physical, mental, moral, or financial, is the proof that material law cannot function in the presence of spiritual consciousness or the conscious awareness of the presence. It is not that your developed consciousness of truth is a power over the law. It is proof that the law is not a power in the presence of your consciousness of grace. It's a subtle difference. Do you see it? It's important that you do. What constitutes your consciousness of grace? And how is it developed? It can be attained only by working consciously and conscientiously with the principles of one power. Reading about it on every page of the Infinite Way books, hearing about it on every Infinite Way tape recording. Through that, gradually your consciousness comes to accept the truth that there is but one power, and it is spiritual. There is but one law, and it is spiritual law. And as your consciousness accepts this truth, material and mental law hits up against that developed consciousness, and like darkness, it's not there anymore. That is how spiritual consciousness operates. Again, you get up, middle of the night, stumble to the bathroom, flick on the light. Where does the darkness go? It's not there anymore. You didn't resist it. You didn't affirm or deny. You didn't take thought against it. You didn't fight it. You didn't pick up the sword against that darkness. But when the light appeared, the darkness wasn't there anymore. That's how spiritual consciousness works. The error hits up against your consciousness, and the descent of my peace, the descent of the presence, the impartation of the I within you, shines, and the darkness isn't there anymore. You didn't overcome it. You didn't rise above it. You simply stood to the side and watched the light shine. You let my light shine. Yes, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine, but it's not a little light. It's infinite, eternal, grace light. And grace is a free gift, and so this light is a free gift. And the only thing that's necessary is to stand to one side, to be an instrument, a channel, to be a transparency for the light to shine through you, through your consciousness. And if it's shining through you, through your consciousness, you must be consciousness. And the light is a free gift. And we behold His glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of light and grace. From the very beginning, God said, let there be light, grace, forever. When God speaks, it's forever. And so this light is yours forever. And so this infinite light, I'm going to let it shine. At first, spiritual consciousness is formed by an intellectual awareness of these principles. You come to accept God as your consciousness, as the only power. And then over and over again, the Infinite Way books hammer away at the theme that God is individual consciousness, your consciousness and mine. If God is your consciousness, what chance would anything have of operating for evil in that consciousness? Nothing shall enter that defileth or maketh a lie. Enter what? Enter God consciousness, your consciousness, because your consciousness is God consciousness. And so as you work with the writings that are filled with the principle that God constitutes your consciousness, and that your consciousness is the one and only power, you are building a consciousness of grace. There is no power external to you. All power functions from within you, and it is only of a spiritual nature. Therefore, it does not govern anyone. It does not control anyone or dominate anyone. It's a spiritual law of freedom unto everyone. This word power bothered me for a long time, because I just couldn't get a feel for God as power, especially when there's nothing for God to be a power to. And so I finally resolved it within myself by using that word light. God is a light onto the situation, and when the light shines, the darkness disappears. We don't know where it goes. It just has no existence. That light in the middle of the night, where is the darkness? It has no existence. And so, in that sense, the power of God, the light of God, shines. That's all. It just shines. It doesn't overcome or come up over anything. It just shines. Lo and behold, something claiming to be a law comes to your attention. Something of your own, your family, patient, or student, and it touches your consciousness, which is no longer your consciousness, but God consciousness, functioning as your consciousness. The one and the only power, the light of the world. And what happens? Exactly what happens to darkness when the light shines. It disappears. You haven't worked on it. Did you work on that darkness? No, you hit the switch. The light shined. It disappears. You have no need of a power. You have not even used the power of truth. You have been the power of truth. You have not used it. If anything, it has used you. As you continue to abide in the principles that have been given to you in this message, every principle that becomes a part of your consciousness constitutes the reborn consciousness, and the old man or the old consciousness that believed in or feared two powers, that used one power over another, that consciousness is dying. The old consciousness is being educated out of itself. As this old man, with his belief in two powers and his subservience to the law, dies, this new consciousness is born. And eventually you rise above the law into a consciousness of grace, in which you are not thinking in terms of overcoming or of power. You are not thinking in terms of words or thoughts. You are living, having your being, and are letting the divine consciousness, the light, flow through you animate and live your life for you. And the next section has a heading that says, the grace consciousness lives as a beholder. There's that word again. He tells us we must live as a beholder. And I recognize in the beginning, we're not that. No, we're taking statements of truth and scriptures that we memorized and we're rehearsing them in our mind. And then we're going about our business. After we open our eyes, we're going about our business. This begins to change, especially if you have results. And by that I mean, you begin to see the non-existence of whatever error is facing you. The only way that can happen is if you've accidentally stumbled into taking no thought, into a stillness, into a silence which is an absence of self, where the self is standing to one side. And so if that's happened, and you recognize it for what it is, and you're able to do it again, you develop the consciousness that lives as a beholder. And then, when you open your eyes, you don't go about your business. You open your eyes as a beholder, and you go about His business. Christ is living its life. Means exactly what it says. You're no longer living a personal life. You are not going about your business after your meditation. Your consciousness has become the consciousness of a beholder. You're living life watching, waiting, witnessing, bearing witness to this inner presence that begins living you. And so your consciousness and this presence become one. And the presence lives itself through you. And your consciousness, as Joel has said elsewhere, is in a constant state of receptivity. If you go to the store, you are open to receive impartations while you're shopping. If you go to the hairdresser, your consciousness is open while you're under the hairdryer. If you go to some sort of business meeting, your consciousness is open during the meeting. Always, 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 you are in a state of receptivity. Christ, in this way, Christ liveth your life. It's quite wonderful. We see miracles. Some of these things almost seem like magic. But it's your consciousness, Christ consciousness, God consciousness. you continue to abide in these principles. Well, we just described what happens. As a way station to this consciousness, you have had the Ten Commandments to tell you what to do and what not to do. And up to a certain extent, you must have succeeded in attaining at least a goodly measure of obedience to them. Then, with the Sermon on the Mount, you went a step further. But in all of this, you were still living your own life. You were trying to love your neighbor as yourself. You were trying to be philanthropic. You were trying to forgive your enemies. You were trying to improve yourself. All this commendable and highly desirable, but it is not the ultimate goal of spiritual living. Now, there came a time for you, hopefully, when you had a spiritual experience. You felt a presence. You felt that synchronicity that comes after a meditation. You felt a blanket of love. You were enveloped with love. And that got your attention. Hey, wow. And so it drew you in. Many are called, few are chosen. The experience proves you've been chosen. Not by a god somewhere. No, you've been chosen by your very own consciousness, which says to you, turn ye and live. It whispers to you, come here. Come here. I am here. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And so you're being chosen by your own consciousness telling you, it is time to awaken. Then comes the bad news. Yes, you can awaken to Christ consciousness. But the road to get there leads to your death. You must die to a lot of things. You must die to a material sense of universe. You must die to a material sense of body. You must die to your words. All the words that you learned up to now can't go with you any farther. All the thoughts that you've had that you thought were prayer, these thoughts cannot go with you. You must die to these thoughts. something in the world that you love, that you fear, that you hate, you must die to that. Your belief that a power is needed to overcome things, you must die to that. Your belief in a material self, your thoughts about a material self, material sense of self, must die. And so all you have to do to awaken, to come into the consciousness of grace, is to die. So completely that a material sense of self has no existence. Only the presence is living you. When you have died that thoroughly, you're still here. You haven't gone anywhere. You're walking and talking and going grocery shopping, going to business meetings. But you're not. You're not. You're bearing witness to Christ living your life through you, in you, and as you. Then you can say, then you can know within yourself, I and this presence are one. I and the Father, the source of my being, are one. I and God consciousness are one. And now I rest. I behold the light shining. I bear witness to the light of the world. Behold, what manner of love the Father has, that we should be called the sons of God, the manifestation of God. And Son, thou art ever with me. All that I have is thine. Stand aside. Rest. Rest by the river that is me. And I will go before thee. And I will prepare a place for thee. And I will be thee. No words, no thoughts, only awareness. Well, we're halfway through the chapter and we're over an hour, so I believe it's time to rest. Thank you for drawing this forth. I couldn't have experienced it without you. I'll see you next time, and God bless.